Welcome once again to Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. And our primary topic today is forgiveness, how to handle it right, and what happens when we don't.
God has forgiven us of all of our sins. And when we don't forgive our fellow mankind, our brothers and sisters, then that hurts God.
And what if we don't believe that God exists? Who then are we disappointing? Well, the very existence of God is at the heart of our second conversation this week.
I think the existence of God provides the simplest and so the most probably true explanation of the most general features of the universe. If there isn't a God, there's no reason to suppose we would exist.
The existence of a God who came down from heaven and, among other things, many other things, offered us forgiveness. We'll make up our two conversations today. This is what we do every week during this broadcast, with God's Word, sharing the Orthodox Christian understanding on various subjects. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. You'll hear from him in just a moment. Father Chris is the founder of the Orthodox Christian Network and also the newly chosen president of Hellenic College Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts. The OCN, as we call it, began a little over 20 years ago and is now ministering worldwide over a network of radio stations, a website at myocn.net, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. And one of the primary emphasis on the web is to share news events of importance to Christians happening around the world. Many of the stories never appear in mainstream media. Check us out on the web and see what you will find at myocn.net, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. We're also a nonprofit ministry, and that, of course, means you can help us do all that we do by donating financially and praying for us, of course, regularly. Learn more at myocn.net. And now with our first conversation, here's Father Chris.
Joining me today is licensed therapist Maria Sakrios Molet. Maria is here to talk with us about forgiveness and healing. Welcome to the show, Maria.
Thank you so much.
Why is forgiveness so important?
Forgiveness is an issue that I would think 100% of the people experience sometime in their life, a difficulty with forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It is a natural occurrence that in life we feel wounded, we feel betrayed, we feel that someone has hurt us in some way. And those feelings, if they're not resolved in a way in which the person who has been harmed feels that they have been forgiven, or the ones who are harming feel like they can be forgiven, then it stays with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it impacts everything that we do. It impacts our body physiologically. It impacts our emotions. It impacts our thoughts, our choices,
mm-hmm.
everything.
What is it about the issue of forgiveness? I mean, what happens when a person cannot forgive someone? Let's say they've been wrong. They have not been promoted because of their age, because of their inabilities to do things, and they harbor these sort of sad feelings toward it. It even happens in a marriage when one will cheat, let's say, on another, and the person is not able to forgive that person. They hold that grudge for life. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with feelings like that, Maria?
Well, I think, first of all, it's something that we have to grow with. There are some people who have been brought up in homes, and through their teachings in the home and hopefully through their church, where they have understood certain realities that no one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Life is not perfect. And no one ever promised us perfection.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay? And that we have to deal with each and every event in our life in a way that is honest, represents humility and understanding of all of that, and love. Love is the basis of all that. There are many people, unfortunately, that have never don't have that foundation. So when they've been wrong, they feel they've been wrong, whether it's a loss of a job or a dissolution of a marriage, they don't have that basis and those skills to be able to work through that event and come out better on the other end.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because you see children, they fight, and and we train them to say they're sorry to each other.
Right, they resolve their issue.
They resolve it, but we also follow that. A healthy parent will follow that and say, now, let's not make that mistake again.
Right,
you know?
Okay.
Let's, in the future, do this, this, and this, so that you don't recreate that scenario.
Well, let's take it to the next level, then. The ability to forgive is also something that affects our relationship with God. How so?
Because God has forgiven us of all of our sins. And when we don't forgive our fellow mankind, our brothers and sisters, then that hurts God. And what hurts God hurts us.
Okay.
And we close ourselves off from God's love and compassion and all the gifts that he can give us when we live a life that is hardened, that is full of hate or revenge or shame.
What do we do with the people that just can't forgive somebody else? What advice do we give to people that feel that way?
Well, I would advise them to continue working on it. I mean, it is a journey. It is a very difficult journey. I mean, I've experienced that myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the first one to tell you that when, you know, my brother approached me and said, you need to forgive this person, I said, no way, no how, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept at me, and I kept struggling with it, and finally I made it through.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a lot of work. It took a lot of prayer. It took a lot of understanding things and reading. There are many wonderful books on the subject,
right.
You know, and it took talking to the right people. It's a very scary and challenging process, and it brings out all of our weaknesses. Everything that is weak in us comes out in that, because when we are operating from a position of fear and anger, there's only ugliness that comes out. And we have to face that. We have to face that in ourselves, and we have to be realistic. And the only way to get to the other side, which is peace, we have to go through it. So many times we are our own worst enemies, and we injure our soul so easily, and we tend to sometimes just not even forgive ourselves, alone somebody else. And it just impacts everybody around us, and we have to work towards that goal. And if we're in a situation where we can't resolve it because the other person won't resolve it,
mm-hmm.
we have to let it go.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of people get stuck.
Let's turn the table for a minute, and let's say that I'm the one who needs to be forgiven for
mm-hmm.
something that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
How do I confront the person that I've hurt? I mean, not necessarily confront, but how do I go up to that person that I've hurt without causing even more damage to the relationship? Because sometimes I think, from my experience as a pastor for 3 decades now, I've seen that some people just don't want to go over that wall. They're afraid to go over. There's a great fear
sure.
in actually making the relationship right. How do I deal with it? Let's say I'm the one who's hurt somebody. Give me those steps.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it takes a lot of courage to even think about that. You have to process that. You have to talk with someone that can help you resolve some of those fears. I don't think you should just run and jump into it. I
mm-hmm.
think you have to be prepared. It's like if you're going to run a marathon, you're going to run a little bit and then a little bit more and a little bit more. You're going to build up your body. You're going to build up your mind. You're going to build yourself up to be able to do this. The same thing. You can't just jump into something. So you have to be able to find the right person to help you prepare yourself for this experience, because the worst thing is to go into it unprepared, because then you're just devastated
mm-hmm.
when the person doesn't hear you. And I think that you have to also understand that you have to preface this by saying, I'm not expecting that you will forgive me.
Hmm.
I'm not expecting that. I need to tell you that I am sorry for what I did. And that is maybe the best that you can get. To think that you can have someone else forgive you, that's their journey. They may not ever forgive you. But you have to do everything in your power to be honest and to make your apologies. And that may have to be just good enough. Or in the best case, the other person may in fact forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
And with couples, you had mentioned before about infidelity and stuff, sometimes, you know, that couples, they forgive each other and then they move on and then it comes back again. Well, sometimes it does, because you have to keep working at it until you get to that point. Just like with our spiritual life, we have to keep working on it. We can't just say, oh, today I did my prayers and that's fine. I don't do anything else.
Well, life certainly
is. Every day we have to work on it.
Life certainly is in black and white. We know it's gray.
No, it's not.
So forgiving and forgetting may not be so easy.
No, I don't think you should ever forget. And many people, you know, because I work with a lot of abuse survivors, and they say, well, I'm, you know, I don't want to forgive, or I have to forgive. It just depends where they're coming from. But the issue is forgiveness and forgetting are two separate things. You should never forget what your life has given you. And you put it, to me, I always tell my clients, you put it on the shelf there. It's kind of like your encyclopedia of life. And it's there. It's there to protect you. Whatever you experience is part of you. And if we can forgive what it is or be forgiven, then that just helps us to be a better person.
Okay.
But we should always, it's like you might not ever ride a bike anymore, but you don't forget how to ride a bike.
Right. Okay.
It's part of who you are. It makes up that beautiful person of who you are.
Finally, we're often the last ones to actually forgive ourselves, aren't we, Maria? But it's so important that we do that, isn't it?
It is very important that we forgive ourselves, because if we don't forgive ourselves again, then we're living a life that is based in shame, typically. And from that come many other very bad things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, anger, addictions, a lot of things come out of shame.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to forgive ourselves, because, and we have to know that we're just people. And we're not perfect. You know, we have to accept ourselves. And that's the problem with so many people. You know, when you look at our society, they think, oh, I need to get a nose job, because they're not accepting themselves.
Right.
So it's the same thing with forgiveness. If you can't forgive yourself, then you can't forgive. You're going to be in that mindset that God has not forgiven you, that no one can forgive you. And we have to understand that we must forgive ourselves so that we can feel God's love. I mean, and we have to be able to do what he's asked us to do. And if we don't forgive ourselves, we're never going to get there. We also have to, at the same time, live a life where we're accountable and congruent with what we say and believe and how we behave. So it's real hard to forgive ourselves when we're going out and drinking all the time. You see what I'm saying? So if you're going to take that journey and say, I want to forgive myself, then structure your life, create an intentional, accountable life so that you can live a life where you can feel good and you can trust yourself. So when you trust yourself, you trust God, and you take responsibility. And you have to remember that we are all connected. Every single one of us is connected. Our lives are all connected, and we have to understand that. And when we place ourselves in that kind of a mindset, then it gets to be more and more difficult not to forgive ourselves.
Maria, it was a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
This is an area, obviously, where every one of us can improve, and you've given us some fantastic advice about how to better forgive others and, yes, ourselves. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much, Father.
For further investigation into this subject of forgiveness, you might want to go to our web store. On our website, there's a link there to the OCN web store, and there are a number of resources on this subject of forgiveness. Again, that's myocn.net, and click on the link to the web store. A quick reminder, you're listening to a weekly outreach called Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. We're also on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Google+. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Well, we're very pleased today to have on our broadcast Professor Richard G. Swinburne of Oxford University. Professor Swinburne is a member of the Orthodox Church and an internationally recognized philosopher who has argued and debated for many years that belief in Christianity is rational and logical. And Father Chris will be talking with him today about his book entitled, Was Jesus God?
Thanks so much for joining us today, Richard.
And thank you very much for having me on your program.
There are many people today who think that religion is just, and I guess I have to use the term, simpletons, or something you participate in because your family makes you do that. But you argue that belief in God, specifically a Christian understanding of God, makes logical sense. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Certainly. I think the existence of God provides the simplest and so the most probably true explanation of the most general features of the universe. What I mean by these are, first, the fact that the universe is governed almost entirely by regular scientific laws, and so the observable regularities are explained by underlying regularities, which are very simple.
Okay.
And then these laws are such as to throw up us. That is to say, most of the possible scientific laws there could be would not produce human bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, we are conscious beings. Now, these are the most general features of the universe, which people don't really notice as they go about their daily business. They take them for granted. But when you step back and think about it, it really is rather extraordinary that things are like that. Firstly, what is it for everything to be governed by scientific laws? Well, just take Newton's law. It means that every atom in the universe and every bit of an atom of which is made attracts every other atom in the universe with exactly the same force.
Mm-hmm.
And then the particles of the universe fall into certain kinds. There are electrons, protons, photons, and so on. And in more particular ways, they behave in exactly the same ways as each other. And then scientists have recently drawn our attention to the fact that our universe is fine-tuned. That is to say, if to one part in a million, it had begun with the Big Bang, with a slightly different Big Bang, a slightly bigger Big Bang, or a slightly smaller Big Bang, we would never have evolved.
Yes.
And likewise, the laws of nature themselves, their constants, have to have very particular, precise values for us to evolve. And then there's the fact of consciousness. All that scientific laws ever explain is the fact that physical things behave in certain ways, but they can't conceivably explain why not merely robots, but conscious beings evolve. And so there's the data. Now, how are we to explain this? Well, the atheist says that's just how it is.
Right.
But it would be, I mean, if you, in normal areas of inquiry, if you find all the coins in the same region have the same markings on them, you look for a common mold out of which they evolve. And it seems to me the height of irrationality to just look at this immense orderliness and then say, that's just how it is, especially when there's another explanation readily available. One should explain things in terms of the simplest way one can do it, that is the most probably true one. And the supposition that there is a God is a very, very simple supposition. In this respect, it's postulating one being, a personal being. Now, persons have purposes, beliefs, and powers. We try to do things, they have purposes, we have beliefs about what the world's like, and we can have some power over it. We can move our bodies in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, in all these ways, we're very limited. Now, the supposition about God is that he's unlimited in all these ways. He can do everything. He knows everything. And he's free from all the influences which make us do irrational things or incline us to do irrational things. And it follows from the supposition I've put that he will be perfectly good because being omniscient, he will know what is good, and being perfectly free, he will not be subject to irrational influences deterring him from what is doing good. So he will act for the good. We are very good things. That's a reason why we would expect, if there's a God, us to exist. If there isn't a God, there's no reason to suppose we would exist.
Okay. What about bad things that happen? If there is a God, which we believe there is, why does he allow, this is a question I get asked all the time as a parish priest,
sure,
why does he allow bad things to happen?
Well, I think the center of any theodicy, that is a justification of why God should allow bad things to happen, must be the free will defense. That is to say, it's a good thing that we should have free will. But free will just to choose between Channel 1 and Channel 2 on television wouldn't be very much worth having. What we need is free and responsible will, responsibility for the way things go in the world. Parents rightly seek to give their own children responsibility for each other. Parents will go out for the evening and leave the younger child in the care of the older child. That is good for the elder child. It gives him deep responsibility for the way things happen. But of course, it's a risk. The older child may beat the younger child up. But it's such a good thing, responsibility, that it's worth paying a significant price for. And furthermore, if we have free will of this responsible kind, if we do make good choices, we become good people. And if we make bad choices, we become bad people. Every time you do a good act, it's easier to do a good act next time, and conversely. So the responsibility God gives us is good in itself on the occasion, because we have control of the way things go in the universe in a limited way. It's up to us. But we also thereby have control over the sort of beings we become. We can mold our character. We have a choice of whether to deal with it with patience and forgiving those who hurt us, or being bitter about the whole thing and self-pitying. And in that way, we too form our own character. We're always in the position of being able to take advantage of this sort of situation in forming ourselves for good. This short period of our earthly life is an enormous opportunity for character formation, and a good God doesn't want to force us to be good. He wants us to make ourselves, and through the suffering, as well as through the good things of life, but primarily when we are faced with serious choices, that makes possible enormous, significant choices for ourselves. So okay. I think that's why he allows evil.
Okay. You argue that even from a logical point of view, there is high probability that Jesus Christ rose from the dead as written in the Scriptures.
Yes.
Can you tell us briefly how you came to that conclusion? Because there, too, many people, they want to believe it, they have faith in it, but they're having some difficulties with it.
Yes, that's fair enough. If we've got no reason to suppose there's a God, then what happens in the world is governed solely by laws of nature. And laws of nature, as far as we can see, do undoubtedly rule out resurrection from the dead. If there's a God, there's reason to suppose, much more reason to suppose, that exceptions to laws of nature might occur. But then why would God do it? Well, he has many reasons for making exceptions to laws of nature in answer to particular prayers, for example. But also, if he makes us suffer for our well-being, as I've argued he does, and if he makes us suffer a lot, as I've argued he does, then he has an obligation to suffer with us. If I force someone to go to war to defend my country, and I am able to go to war myself, then I ought to do so. So we would expect him to become incarnate. And for similar reasons, we would expect him to make available atonement for the sins that we have committed, if we are unable to do that ourselves, and to provide more information about how to live in the right way if we can't find out for ourselves. So we'd expect there to be among us someone who lived a life of suffering, who claimed to be God, who gave us good moral teaching. So let's look around for such a person, and there is an obvious candidate in Jesus. And if God did provide this, then he might well show us he'd done so. And one obvious way of showing us he'd done so is by connecting the life with a miracle which forward did the work of Jesus, of his incarnate self. And so we've got a lot of background reason for expecting something like a miracle, like a resurrection. And then In fact, there's quite a bit of historical evidence for it, quite good historical evidence on top of that. One mustn't underestimate that. The tomb was undoubtedly empty because even the Jews said that, as Matthew 28:15 said. They claimed the disciples had stolen the body, but that meant the tomb was in fact empty. And then there are plenty of witnesses who claim to have seen him. These witnesses died for it, and it's in a very early tradition. Everything in the documents is, favors that, and so there is quite a lot of evidence. It's the sort of thing you would expect. It all fits together.
Wonderful. I want to thank Professor Richard G. Swinburne of Oxford University for helping us all better understand and defend our Christian faith. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you.
Professor Swinburne's book, again, is entitled, Is Jesus God? And we have that available in our web store. There is a link to it there on our homepage at myocn.net. And any purchase you make through our web store, which takes you to Amazon, generates a donation back to the ministry. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. This is Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. Join us next week if you can, and tell your friends about the broadcast. And remember to always have faith in what you listen to.